Hey guys, it's Lavetta. We were having so much fun during this episode, honestly, that we forgot to say within the episode that this is season 5 finale, which means we will be taking a couple weeks break in between because we just need to recharge and come back stronger than ever. Again, as always, thank you for listening to us, supporting us, and sharing our episode. And we love you, and we will see you in 2 weeks after this episode. Here we go, right now. Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes.
You know, I realized last week I did not say it right. I said, this is a podcast. And it was just weird. I was like, why did I do that? My brain fart. But this week it's better because I have been getting my life, which this will be like a couple weeks old when this comes out next week. I'm team KDOT. So just going to put that out there. Team Kendrick. Drake is a pussy-ass bitch whose chickens are finally coming home to roost. So
I have to agree with your pussy-ass bitch assessment. I am also a Kendrick fan. Yeah. It's so good.
Guys, I just played her off before we got on. I just played her the They Not Like Us, the thing that basically won it. And she was like, oh my God. And Miriam is... a nice wife and mom who minds her business and, you know, goes to PTA. And so she
That I mind my business, but
basically she has a life and I don't. So I've had time to get into all the intricacies of the beef and I have gotten my life. I just want to say, I don't understand why we bitches got all the strays, but that's all right. I get it. It's hip hop. We just out here trying to become bad bitches, get snatched for the summer, and we just catch the strays during the beef, but that's hip hop, you know, I'm just saying. But we are also smart enough to stay out of this because I have been getting my life. My favorite thing over the past couple of weeks is watching black men in particular respond to the songs that have come out on both sides, but especially this last one, They Not Like Us from Kendrick.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Because they know all of like the references, like some of the references, a lot of the references I do know, but some of them I didn't know, like the specifics on like I think he says like ox or something like, or lean, like it's all like reference to like cough syrup that they, do you know what lean is?
No.
Okay. So lean is basically, forgive us, listeners, but I think this is interesting. Lean is basically like, it's cough syrup and like alcohol or something. It's something that rappers have been using. Lil Wayne made it really famous, I think.
Yes.
It's supposed to be really, really bad for you. But like, I think something he said in the song They Not Like Us was like a reference to like lean. Like, so there's some, and then there's like basketball references. So it's just that I have been getting my life watching these black men respond to first hearing the song.
I did not realize any of this was happening.
Yeah,
but I have been schooled, and I'm very much team Kendrick.
Yeah, so I mean, get into it.
And like, I did understand. I'd say 78% of the references, which is pretty good for a white girl.
That's pretty good. I mean, that's pretty good for a woman who has a life. Because like I got, I'm probably a little bit higher, but not much higher. Like I just, some of this stuff is definitely for the youth. As Joe Pesci would say, but yeah, that's a preamble, but I think we should get started. I have a bit of a short one and I am first this week. As you guys know, it is AAPI, month
it
this month.
Yes.
Asian American Pacific Islander month, appreciation month. Big ups to our AAPI, and also big up to our Asian listeners who are may not be in America. Thank you for listening.
Right.
We appreciate you.
Yes.
And so on that note, I wanted to highlight, so two things. I had no life, so I was following the beef, hip hop, love hip hop. I'm a Tupac girl, by the way, even though I do love Biggie, but. You don't mess with Tupac. So I'm like, get in that ass, Kendrick, because Drake disrespected Tupac. So he got to be folded up, you know? So I'm just saying. So I was like, you know, how can I sort of like compliment, you know, maybe a bit of a theme, but also like how I'm feeling and like, you know, because the one thing about our podcast, Notorious Women, could be heroic or horrific, right. But they could also be trailblazers in a lot of ways. So I thought, right. What if I could find like an Asian female hip hop artist?
Let's go.
And apparently there's a lot to choose from.
Okay.
I did not know that. Unfortunately, a lot of them are not in the U.S. because the U.S. is dominated by a black hip hop artist, because it began with black American musical roots. So right. That's fitting. But hip hop is worldwide. It's become worldwide probably since the 90s, beginning in the 90s, but definitely in the 2000s. But so it has made its way to Asia. Both Southeast Asia and East Asia. So I searched around and I found a couple ladies apparently in China, Chinese right. female hip hop yes. artists. So I looked and I found a few. One was called, so there's this website called Madame Rap that's out of China. And so they actually helped me with some of this research. And they presented me, there's a girl named Lexi Liu. Hers, so I sort of looked at like the videos that they had, like the samples or like the TikTok short videos that they had of their stuff. And her stuff is felt kind of like an R&B infused kind of hip hop, which I love.
Yeah.
Vanita, I liked her because she had a lot of swag. Like, just, you got to have a lot of swag. You're in hip hop.
Yeah.
There's another performer by the name of 9-1 who had a very high quality video and just look. And then there's this girl called Viva. She had great beat. She kind of reminds me of, do you know who Chloe Bailey is?
Not at all.
So there's the twins, Chloe and Hallie, and they are like mentees of Beyonce.
Oh.
So they came out when they were very young and they were a duo, and then they have since gone solo. Hallie was a little mermaid, the new Little Mermaid.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I was so, like, this feels familiar. Yes.
Yeah, they both have amazing voices, but Hallie's much more of like a ingenue feeling. She has a higher voice. Again, Little Mermaid got pipes,
Little
amazing
mermaid.
Pipes.
Oh, her voice in Little Mermaid is
amazing.
So good.
They're very talented young women. And then her sister, Chloe, and I love how they're so close. I always wanted a sister, so I'm always jealous when I find sisters, especially if they get along. And so Chloe, I don't know if Chloe's older, but she seems older because she's much more voluptuous now as a woman. Like, she's very sexy.
Right.
But they're both extremely talented. And Chloe is more, because she's curvier than Hallie. So Viva kind of reminded me of like a hip hop version of Chloe and the way she's kind of moving and like the sound. But I landed on her because I could find a lot on her apparently too. That is my notorious woman this week, Viva, the Chinese hip hop artist. Yeah.
Oh my God. I know nothing. I'm excited.
So here we go. So Viva was born Mao Yangyi. I'm going to butcher Chinese. Mm-hmm. I'm
yes,
not.
Sure.
If it's Japanese, I might get it, but Chinese, no. So please forgive my pronunciation of Chinese. She was born Mao Yangyi on October 29th, 1995, in the Yang Sichuan province. Her English stage name, Viva, is a synonym for doll in Chinese.
Oh.
Chosen because she had a baby face when she was little.
Aw.
So when she was young, her father unfortunately died, and it made her mother a single mom.
Okay.
Because of this, her mother had to find work wherever she could and often had to work away. So she was mainly raised by her mom, but mainly her grandmother.
Okay.
So her grandmother stepped up to take care of her. Now, growing up, she said that she was influenced by Rihanna and Little Sims, but her biggest musical influence as a child was an artist by the name of Jay Chou, a Taiwanese artist known as the King of Mandopop.
Okay.
So she's getting all of the influence. It's so weird. She was young enough to be influenced by Rihanna.
I know. I was like 95. I'm so old.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, at age 16, she chose to leave school and focus on developing her talents as a performer. And she, by all accounts, her mother's always been very supportive of her artistic endeavors, which is, I love to hear that. That's so great.
Yeah.
These kids need encouragement. So she traveled around the local area doing cover songs in local bars near her home, and then later began to travel a little bit further out to increase her visibility, and even considered And she had become like a notable underground artist. And, okay. you know, started performing more original stuff as a hip hop artist. Now, she would also occasionally ghostwrite songs for other artists, which is a thing in hip hop. And that's a thing that, again, people accuse Drake of. And not only Drake, but a lot of artists. To be fair, I think when you get a certain level, maybe you're just too busy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is that you either should co-write it with somebody, but some of these newer artists maybe not have time. But who knows? It's not a judgment, you know, because it provides work for artists who are, you know, so there's that. Now, she met up with, she eventually connected with hip-hop producer Double G in Shenzhen City and joined his team, his crew, basically.
Okay.
But her big break didn't come until she appeared on the first season of iQIYI is like a platform, like a Netflix or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Their show, The Rap of China. So this is like it's like an American Idol or The Voice type of competition show. And so it helped to bring underground rappers into the spotlight. During the season, she rapped in both Mandarin and Sichuan dialects.
Damn.
Yeah. She also, in her second round, she performed Life's a Struggle, but changed the lyrics to match her own childhood experiences. Very clever.
Yeah.
And she was the only female artist to reach the top four.
That's my girl. Yes.
That's impressive.
Because
hip hop is very male dominated. Even though the women have been there from the beginning. Hello, Roxanne Chanté.
Hello.
Previous,
I mean, right?
Yeah.
Please to go see that episode as well.
Yeah, but it's very male focused, even apparently in China. Now, with her profile being raised by appearing on this show, because you can imagine it was huge, like just a huge get for her. She landed a contract and released her first album called 21 in October of 2017. Which included the single My New Swag.
All right.
And that was featured in the 2018 film Crazy Rich Asians.
Yes. Okay. I did love the film, but I think the book is a little better. But only because I read the book first. Nobody asked me my opinion on any of this.
Okay,
I'm just
audience.
Giving it.
Vivian. Vivian. See, I'm so upset with her. I'm calling her Vivian. Miriam.
Mm.
Is that person. The book was better.
Yeah. You can say it. I'm that bitch. It's true. It's fine. I can say it even.
I'm just teasing you. I can't speak to it. I didn't read the book. I only watched the movie. So
the book is so good.
Yeah. And I've heard that. I've heard that. And usually that is the case. But, you know, they have to take creative license, adapt it. And, you know, so.
Yeah.
But
listen,
I mean,
I still loved it. But
yeah.
You know?
I mean, and it was a international success.
Yes.
And I mean, it was one of the biggest films of the year. So the fact that she was featured on the soundtrack is huge.
Very huge. Yes.
She was also featured in a single called New World by the group Cruella, an American EDM type of group.
I know that song, and I will tell you why.
Oh.
And it is because of the video game Just Dance. I have danced to the song New World many, many times.
Do you remember how it goes? Because
not at all.
Okay.
Nope.
We won't do that.
It's a very challenging dance. Okay.
Okay. She would go on to secure the bag as in a modeling contract with American designer Alexander Wang and the sports brand Kappa. So she is a bona fide star. Like this is huge. Like that's so impressive. Like just like a working class girl, like seeing her dreams come true. In 2018, however, the Chinese government blocked hip hop culture and actors with tattoos from appearing on television.
Oh, my God.
Because the government is very conservative. They're like, this American influence and these Negroes, these black people, because, again, the Chinese have an anti-black problem, too.
I don't understand. We solved racism in the 60s.
Oh, I'm sorry. It must not have gotten to China.
Lavetta.
So.
I have told you this so many times, and you just don't listen.
Okay. As a result, obviously, hip hop is our thing, right? So she was removed from a television show called Happy Camp. It was a variety type show. So it's like cutting off her bag. It's like, come on. So but her time off of television allowed her to focus more on music. So she released 21 part two, because basically in 2017 it was 21 part one, or maybe it was just 21. And then after this, it's like, well, let's do a part two.
Right. It was successful. Let's keep going.
Let's pivot. Yeah. Now in 2019, she released Mao Young Key and signed with Warner Music China and DMG, which became known as Dream Music Group in 2021.
Okay.
But in 2020, in 2020, the following year, she released her third album called A Vow. Later that year, V Dynasty Part 1 would be released. And then Part 2 of V Dynasty would be released the following year. So she's putting out more and more music.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But back to 2021. So apparently... And this is a problem, unfortunately, this is a pitfall, I should say, unfortunately, when people who don't quite understand a culture appropriates or appreciates and tries to sort of dip their toe into it as an homage, but they don't really mm-hmm. understand, particularly when it comes to, forms of entertainment that are that Black people are known. And that's Black people throughout the diaspora, whether it's in America, in the Caribbean, or even on the continent. So it's like people are acting like the whole slave and colonialism, all that stuff never happened. And there's like context for it. So,
right.
And I find, unfortunately, sometimes our Asian brothers and sisters who are outside of the United States don't quite understand that, and so sometimes they can put their foot in their mouths without realizing it and be extremely offensive. Sometimes it's on purpose, because again, anti-Black problem, sometimes it's not. So
I mean, you see it in America as well.
Yeah, but it's even more so. And I think tell me what you think of this. So in 2021, she apparently appeared in blackface.
Oh no.
While performing as Nicki Minaj alongside other celebrities, quote unquote, cosplaying as Ariana mm-hmm. Grande and Jessie J to recreate the trio's 2014 American AMA performance of Bang Bang.
I like that song.
Now, when we say blackface, so basically nowadays how they do it, and I saw somebody doing it in Poland or something. It's not like the traditional, an actual black face and then the red lips. And what they're doing is we call it blackfishing online. So they're tanning themselves. It's still blackface, but
it's still blackface.
So apparently Nicki Minaj had like curly hair during that performance. Uh-huh. So she comes out tanned with the curly hair. So as she posted an image advertising her appearance on social media, some commentators called out her use of blackface appropriately. Mm-hmm. That was buried in it because largely the response was like, oh my God, positive replies. Because her fans, who I'm assuming are also probably Asian, don't really realize how offensive it is. Basically oblivious to the controversy around putting on a tan, aka blackface, to perform as a Black artist.
Do you think they really have no idea?
I really think that they, because remember, she's like 20, 21.
She is young.
Like, she, well, at this point, so she's born 95, so she'd be like 26, but that's still young. They've grown up seeing Black people be celebrated especially in the music industry and in hip hop, right?
Oh, that is true.
So in their mind, they're like, oh, but it's just like what we tell our white brothers and sisters here. You can be Bob Marley and just put on a fake dread wig. You don't have to darken your skin to be Bob Marley.
It's really interesting because I do wonder, like I studied theater, mm-hmm. right? So I actually know an inordinate, is that the right word? Mm-hmm. I don't even know.
Inordinate.
Amount, like a lot.
Yeah.
of entertainment history in not just our country, but other countries, because I had to study it. Like that was part of curriculum. So I know about blackface and minstrel shows and all of that and how horrible it was, but I feel like, maybe it's not taught to the general public?
No, it's not.
Maybe it should be?
And also, this is a generation who grew up on social media. I have people come up on my timeline who will say something stupid like, Michael Jackson wasn't that big, or like, why isn't this song bigger? And you're like, the song that stayed at number one for 20 weeks? What are you talking about?
Like, big.
I don't know if people are just like posting stuff, or like, I really think sometimes they don't really know. And I'm like, you have Google there. You can literally Google something from 20 years ago and know, like somebody will post something about a Whitney Houston song and be like, why wasn't the song bigger? We're like, literally that song was huge.
Are you kidding? Like, I Wanna Dance With Someone did pretty well.
Okay. Yeah. So like, you know, or like, what's the one? I love that song. Don't make me close, you know.
One more.
I don't want to hurt anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
we can't hit those notes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We didn't hit any of the notes. Right.
Not
right.
One.
So you can't sue us. Or
don't come at us.
Yeah.
So, prove like, it was that song. Can't do it.
They'll literally,
can you?
Or they'll put down like, they'll do like Mariah Carey's Vision of Love. I'm like, and they'll be like, this song wasn't that big. And it's like, because it's not big in their world. It's like, what are you talking about? This song was huge.
It was on VH1 every other video. Yeah. It was pretty darn big.
So it could be that. But I also think because, remember, China's more closed off too. So they're not getting access to information.
My child wanted to dress up as Martin Luther King, as Dress Up As Your Hero Day, very cute, very sweet, 5 years old. We had a little kid, Martin Luther King Jr. book, and he was wearing a suit and tie. And I was like, that's cute, because I actually have like the Target version for the 5 year old in your closet. So you could totally, and my innocent child goes, should I make my face darker? And I said, absolutely not. You must never do that. And we had this conversation. But
I don't think they've had that conversation because honestly, I don't think their parents or their grandparents know. I remember when I was in high school and I went to Japan for the first time.
Uh-oh.
And we were invited there and they were lovely. They basically treated us like local celebrities. We were like the newspaper. It's a great. Anyway.
Aww.
And we went to this classroom and now our chaperone from his school is one of my favorite teachers, Miss Smith. I love Miss Smith. She's a white lady. And so the teacher of this classroom, they wanted to do a presentation for their American friends who came. And so in the group is me and another friend of mine, Dara, who's black, and another friend, Sally, who's actually a Taiwanese, and then two white girls, right? Brenna, and I gotta forget that, Stacy. Stacy's the other white girl. So it's like a mixed group, very representative of America, right?
Totally. Yeah.
And so they wanted to do a presentation to just show how much they, you know, it was like a nice thing. And the song was Old Black Sam.
No, it wasn't. Stop. No, it wasn't.
And Ms.
Oh,
Smith
my God.
Like, she's like, oh, no, no, no. So she pulls him aside. She's like, because keep in mind, this is like a little bit of a history. I'm going to put y'all up on game, like K-Dot says. Minstrelsy. Yeah. Which is the root of American popular music, people came from white performers going down on a slave. This is one of the things. I don't know how true this is, but it this is one of the origin stories. Went down and observed slaves on a plantation like 1846. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Went back to the North and decided to put cork on their face and mimic some of the characters that they met, slave characters that they met on the plantation, and sing quote unquote old Negro spirituals, right? Mm-hmm. So they're basically mimicking what they think black people sounded like, because they probably watched like a performance or something. And perhaps in their mind, they thought they were, it was a tribute, or they thought, oh, this is soulful music. And I don't know why they thought they needed the blackface, but whatever. It was so massively successful. Like, it was a movement. So all the artists started doing it. And then blackface was so prolific. It was like an American export. And it was so prolific in the United States that black artists, in order to perform, actually had to put on cork on their faces. Because blackface became the standard norm. And out of that came a lot of the blueprint for American popular music, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people
well,
don't
then
understand.
Vaudeville grew out of that.
And right. And so,
which included it, but not was just it.
Exactly. And so it's, so a lot of it, a lot of people don't know that history. A lot of Americans don't know that history. So that's why blackface stayed on up until like the 50s. Like you find movies. Mm-hmm. That's why you find Judy Garland in blackface or, oh God, what's the guy from, what's my guy? Humphrey Bogart did a movie in blackface. Like
Sal makes fun of me because you know the movie White Christmas?
Yes.
I love that movie and we watch it every year. And there is one scene where right before they're showing like a rehearsal, it says minstrel show on the, and it like lifts up and Sal's like, still going to keep watching this movie. And I was like,
it's time.
It's not blackface. It's just a vaudeville piece.
Right. And it's called, and then so people don't, for, so people know that, blackface, AKA minstrelsy mm-hmm. shows.
Right.
It like permeated every other sort of like performance style, performance types of shows. So it's basically the basis for American popular music, right? And so much so that even black artists had to use it in order to perform, to even be booked, which is insane, right?
Yep.
And then it's so funny because then when more black artists started doing it, they were like, the black artists seem to be doing it better. It's like you think, because they're creating characters and not like caricatures, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyway, so I think that that has not, so during that time, it actually was exported to Asia, which is why in Japan, up until recently, they had like toothpaste called like Black Sambo toupees, or it's just like crazy. So I don't think that they know, but now they're on social media. So when people saw her, Vava, like basically advertising her upcoming performance,
wait,
that was going to
show. Viva or Vava?
It's Vava. I'm sorry. Have I been saying Viva?
Uh huh.
I'm sorry. It's Vava. Vava.
It's fine.
Vava. Guys, I'm sorry. It's been a long...
Listen,
a lot's
okay.
going on. Vava, not Viva, Vava. oh my God, I cannot believe I'm so embarrassed. Anyway.
Listen, when you make mistakes, it makes me feel better about myself. Thank you.
Well, you must feel very good about yourself because I make mistakes all the time. Anyway, so when Vava was advertising her upcoming performance on the show, on the upcoming show, somebody wrote, one person commented, wait until this gets to Twitter.
Oh, no. Yes.
Because they were on Chinese Twitter, which is called Weibo. Yeah. So the clip circulated and in the stateside, we were like, what the fuck? Now, the incident follows the use of blackface in China Spring Festival Gala extravaganza. That year, despite international condemnation over a previous segment using blackface on, quote, the world's most watched TV show in 2018. So she should have known better because there was already some controversy back in 2018.
Okay, then she should have known better. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, while Vava likely intended this performance as a tribute, that neither the artist or her team were involved in the show's productions was aware of the insensitivity of using blackface given such high profile international backlashes in recent years seems incredible to a lot of people. Like maybe she kind of knew it, but just didn't realize how offensive it was. Like, well, this is what I want to do. Like, I mean, even white people here, like, and they know better. And it's like, no, I want to do it. I can play anything. It's like, come on, girl.
You could, but you shouldn't. And maybe you can't, actually.
Maybe you can't. Now, in a Roddy.co, that's a website, RADDI.co article, Jake Newby writes, quote, unfortunately, China's new wave of hip hop has largely risen with insufficient attention paid to its roots and heritage.
Yeah.
It would, of course, be grossly unfair to dismiss all Chinese rappers as ignorant. Yet incidents such as this show how much work needs to be done and how depressingly easy it is for something like blackface to make it onto mainstream TV, end quote. That's the thing. Like it went through several approvals and people were like, yeah, that's fine. It's like, have none of you been to the U.S.?
So, I mean, I have a hard time even believing that.
But let me just make it clear for any of our Asian, Southeast Asian listeners, we love you guys, but let me be clear. Do not do blackface.
Yeah, just don't do it.
Don't tan your skin. If you want to pay homage or you want to play a character that's black, just recreate their hairstyle, maybe. Like, yeah. I mean, that's borderline. The braid stuff, I'll get into that. The braid stuff is already borderline, but okay, I get it. But don't ever, ever, ever like darken your skin with makeup, with tanning. Don't do that. It's incredibly offensive.
And the reason it's offensive, I just want to, I'll white explain this for a moment. I got you. Is because of its history. So in and of itself, I understand thinking wearing makeup shouldn't be offensive, but because historically it has been used to brutally destroy an entire people, I'll just go there because that's the fact. We don't do it now.
Yeah, because it was used to ridicule. Let me make that the blackface. Even who knows what the intentions of the first people who started doing it, but it eventually became a way to ridicule black people and to also establish white perception of blackness in the United States. Right. Yeah. So a lot of it fed into tropes of like lazy black people, which I never understood because I'm like, they're actual slaves. How can you be
they're
lazy?
Literally working harder than everybody and getting $0.
Right. Yeah. So that or like the sassy black woman or like that's why you just step and fetch it. And like that's why it's like, mm-hmm. you know, the slow, ignorant black person. And so it's synonymous with that. So when you guys redo it, it's like you are putting it's like when men pretend to be women. Right. So imagine if every man's perception of what it's like to be a woman is based on men putting on dresses and being hyper sexualized, hyper feminized, or,
that's a really good analogy.
And that's the only perception we had in media of what womanhood is and not actual women. Yeah. So there's that. Now, to her credit, she has been quoted as saying, quote, hip hop comes from the U.S. And let's be honest, here we're really just copying their style. She also said, end quote, she also said, we're still finding our way, still creating and finding our own Chinese stuff of hip hop. We need to put more Chinese elements into our music, end quote.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. Like, it's hip hop is something that we want to share our culture and we love it when people, we actually love it when people are like, yeah, I want to try quote unquote black music, hip hop, right? We love it when people do that, but make it your own. Cause I love it when Cardi B raps in Spanish. Like, I love, love that. I love that, right? So, Vava's already rapping in Chinese, but she is also starting, she's noted for her, the way she infuses traditional cultural Chinese elements. In her popular song, My New Swag, she used several traditional Chinese instruments, the pipa, the eryu, the suna, the guban, and pitch cymbals, the zailuo, and the dailuo. She also incorporated an aria from the Peking Opera.
Oh, cool.
And during a bridge sung by an opera singer. So she's trying to incorporate more of like culture, traditional Chinese culture. And I think that is fabulous. That's a true homage because hip hop is an expression of our cultural heritage. Right.
Right.
So, so I love that. And that is what she's also really noted for. Now in 2022, she released Mysteriel. Of all of these, she may be known. She's also known, I have to put this in there, to be pretty nationalistic and allegedly publicly has taken a pro-mainland government stance regarding Hong Kong.
Okay.
I'm not going to get into that. We're not going to get into that. Mm-mm. I don't know that much about that, but I just need to put that out there. Now, finally, to wrap up, this year, she's still going strong. She's a young lady. She's only 28 years old. She had a showcase at the Marquee Singapore main stage, which is like a big, big, they have the Marquee in like Las Vegas. So it's a big venue.
Yeah.
And during her 30-minute set, she did My New Swag and Rap Star, her other single Rap Star, which shows off her distinctive sound of fusing traditional Chinese music and hip hop. So that she continues to live her best life. So that is Vava, a Chinese hip hop artist that is doing the damn thing. And so
listen, she's fascinating. And you've also given me the backstory to, I think, more than one Just Dance choreography.
Oh. Have I?
Because, like, I feel like my new swag feels familiar.
And it's so interesting. I wanted to choose China versus Korea, because obviously Korea has the K-pop, which is, the boy band thing. It really, I mean, because again, we can say boy, like, new. A lot of it is based on New Edition, which is based on New Kids on the Block, which is NSYNC. They think it's, like, in K-pop, they think it's all NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. It's like, no. Mm. That's based on New Edition, New Kids on the Block. And New Edition will tell you that they're based on, like, the Jackson 5. So it's all, like, yeah. But
why didn't you say Boys to Men yet? Because that's my favorite.
And Boys to Men, of course.
Thank you.
K-pop has their own, that's a very specific kind of thing, but there's a lot of Korean hip-hop artists, but I specifically want to find, like, a Chinese, like, something else other than Korean
artists. Whole culture of that, I have no idea. It's really, really interesting. Yeah.
So that is Vava, not Viva. Vava. V-A-V-A. Okay.
Thank you so much for her.
My pleasure. So who's your notorious woman this week?
Okay. So our listener, Mabel Weber Snow.
Ooh.
Hey, Mabel.
Hey,
girl.
Mabel.
Threw out a woman to us, which I quickly hid from you, Lavetta.
Okay.
Because I was like, she sounds cool. And I'll just say it, and you probably saw it already because you're listening and it says it in the title, but her name is Janet Green. Who? Okay.
Okay.
So this was a while ago where she gave us this wonderful woman, and I had the hardest time finding really anything about her life, like the hardest time. And I tried to go through like other sources, like, let me just like Google her YouTube. Absolutely not. Nothing there. But I mean, I obviously found something because I'm talking about her.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to throw it out. Listen, if people know way more and they're like, actually, she's in this book that did not pop up in your research, I will do a part two.
Please let us know. Yeah.
So this is what we know. So I got information through Wikipedia, IMDb, a retrospective by Paulette Reynolds, which actually gave me the most to go off of, and the nationalarchives.gov.uk. I know that she was born Ethel Victoria Green on July 4th, 1908.
Okay.
I assume she had parents. That feels right. She had some short stories published before she was 16. So I'm guessing that she had like a decent childhood, right?
Right.
Because, you know, encouraging of artistic endeavors, right? She became an actress in 1931. She acted with Ralph Lynn in the Aldwych farces, and she had leading roles in the plays Hello Again and Nap Hand at the Aldwych and Shaftesbury Theatre. This is very British, so I thought you'd really love this.
Because I'm British?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm getting you back to your roots, Lavetta. Here we go. And she was involved in theatrical entertainment for the armed forces throughout World War II.
Oh. Okay.
So she adopted the professional name Janet Green, but she apparently also wrote as Sarah Mutimer and occasionally Janet McCormick after her second marriage to theater manager and writer John McCormick. Now, I said second marriage before I said first marriage because I don't know what happened with that.
This woman's a spy. I'm telling you.
I'm telling you. I mean, I really think they covered some stuff up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm usually good at finding these things out because I'm generally relentless. But this was, I mean, so, but let's go into it because there's still some fun things to talk about with her.
Okay.
So in 1945, she gave up acting and began writing for plays. She wrote screenplays. And she often wrote in collaboration with her husband, John. So between 1956 and 1959, I know I just jumped some years, didn't I? They were both under contract to the J. Arthur Rank Organization to provide two original screenplays per year for 3 years.
Oh.
So the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, she wrote tons of movie scripts alone in collaboration with people, mostly in collaboration with her husband. Some of the titles were The Clouded Yellow, The Good Beginning, Tears for Simon, Eyewitness, The Third Key, The Gypsy and the Gentleman, Victim, Seven Women, Passions. And that's not all of it. But do you really want to sit and listen to all the names of all the things?
I mean, that's a good gig. This is why old movies have better roles for women.
Yeah. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Actually, we're going to talk about why maybe the movie industry was better back in the day. I don't know. Let's talk about it. So there are three major films that brought us all to her light. And they were social issue films of producer Michael Ralph and director Basil Dearden. In all three films, she wrote with the collaboration with her husband. So we're going to talk about those three films because I don't know. I think maybe it's an insight to who she was. So the first film I want to talk about is called Sapphire. Have you ever heard of that film?
Yes, I have.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Okay.
Like, I basically read half the script because I found that online.
Did you? Oh, yeah. Wow.
Like, not really. Like, there was an excerpt from the retrospective.
Okay.
So I'm lying to you. It wasn't from that film. It was from another film.
Oh,
but
okay.
I was like, wait, that wasn't the thing. But
now I'm feeling better because you're messing up. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm messing. See? Thank you. I just wanted you to feel better.
I
obviously had everything written down perfectly and know everything. I know this episode is weird. I know, but it's fun.
It's fun.
Okay. So, as you well know, it dealt with racial tension in the 1950s London. It was, I don't know if you know this, she was nominated for a BAFTA Award for Best British Screenplay in 1960 and won the 1960 Edgar Allan Award for Best Foreign Film Screenplay from the Mystery Writers of America. And it also won a British Academy Award for Best British Film.
Oh.
Now, okay. Let's talk about Sapphire for a moment. So I think it's really interesting that from Paulette, I read that her progressive screenplay is sometimes at odds with the director's direction, which have you seen this movie?
Yes, I have. So I saw it a long time ago though.
So the movie is about a woman who looks white but is biracial and she is dead. They find her and there are two cops basically assigned to the case. One cop is virulently, obviously just like racist, right? And the other cop is like not racist.
Okay.
Right? I don't know to go so far as anti-racist, but like not racist. I make that very clear. Right? This is a distinction.
What year is it? What, 1950s?
1959.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So.
So it's, you know, like, I don't know if we're going to pray to him for being the second coming or anything, but, or third, I don't know what religion you are, but how many comings? I have no idea. But I think it's interesting because she wrote this very progressive movie. The director... she accuses him of lingering the camera too long over wild peekaboo shots, clashing with loud music and garish colors. And it seemed like he was commenting on the primitive connection between raucous music and people of color, which I think is really interesting because it like that in the same vein where she wrote something progressive and he tried to underplay it. The characters, I mean, and there is a line in the movie that cop said, quote, she died because she was colored, end quote.
Right. I mean, this is like, it's so interesting because this is what a lot of artists go through today. That's why anything that gets made and that you guys can see is a miracle.
Like, yeah.
It's like so many people go into making something and getting your vision from the page onto the screen is really, really tough. So right. It's actually kind of, it's depressing, but also comforting knowing that they were like people who have managed to create something great, you know, that survives the test of time, had to put up with a lot of the same bullshit. But it's also depressing. Right. It's like we're still having these issues. So
yeah, and that like the fact that like listen that this movie got greenlit,
yeah,
at all, right?
Yep.
But then they undermine their point.
Well, you know, I think
they're trying to make money and they're trying to appeal to white people.
It's also probably trying to enterprise upon Imitation of Life. You know that movie?
Yeah.
Came out in the 30s, the original one, and then another one came out in the 50s. And they were hugely successful. And it's about a black woman. Well, it's about a lot of things, but part of the story is that it's a black woman who's passing for white.
Right.
So, yeah.
Which is, I mean,
but she was killed because she was colored.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm not going to give it away, but
I'm laughing because it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
The New York Post wrote in Janet's, with respect to her as the writer, quote, perhaps the screenplay writer, one Janet Green, deserves her own special notice for a picture that is so special. So she writes, I'm sorry
to interrupt you. The reason why I laugh, because it reminds me of that line in Trading Places, like one of my favorite movies of all time, where Don Ameche, you know, the premise is that they've set them up to trade their lives. And then to, you know, Eddie Murphy, this young black kid who's basically homeless, it seems, because he doesn't really have a backstory. And they switch out Dan Aykroyd's character, who's Winthrop, he's like a posh white guy. And so they conspire to switch their lives to see what would happen. And when Eddie Murphy's in the bathroom and he hears the Dukes, the old two dudes who set this up, here is what they did to them. Don Ameche's character's no. Early on when they come in contact with Eddie Murphy, he says, oh, there's something wrong with that guy, you know? And he was like, of course there's something wrong with him. He's a Negro. And it cracks me up because he's so adamant that that's, of course there's something wrong with him. It's like, it's ridiculous, but this is how racists think. And it's just like, but the way he says it, and obviously it's a comedy, so it's played for laughs, but he's just like, he's just so adamant. He's a Negro. Of course something's wrong with him.
What is interesting, right? And this is the end of the 50s when they're filming it, is that that's the one who said, oh, she died because she was colored, is the one who was not racist.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We say not racist, we're like...
But that's why there's a difference between not racist and anti-racist.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
That's very important.
But that's like, very progressive for a white man to be saying that in a movie in 1959.
No, it is. Which is why I'm calling it out.
And he used colored, which was more respectful. Okay.
Right.
So the alternative, but.
So another one of those three movies was called Life for Ruth, which dealt with religious intolerance, which is about a father who let his daughter Ruth die because his religious beliefs did not agree to any sort of medical intervention.
Oh, they're Christian Scientists.
Yeah.
Jean Harlow.
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh, Jehovah's. That's what happened in Jean Harlow. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. And the New York Times wrote of that movie, quote, in avoiding blatant bias, mawkish sentimentality, and theatrical flamboyance, it makes a statement that is dramatic, powerful, and provocative, end quote.
Wow.
So I don't know too much more about that one. But the third one she wrote so much, but I'm just going to focus on these three, is Victim. And it was the first mainstream examination of homosexuality. It was also nominated for a BAFTA BAFTA. Sorry for offending your people.
BAFTA.
For Best British Screenplay in 1962.
Wow.
Now, she writes, Janet writes, that it was, quote, written with the shadow of the censor's axe, end quote. So in this time, homosexuality was still illegal in England. I think technically just between two males, codified by the Buggery Act of 1533.
Buggery.
Man, we love an old-timey law, don't we?
Buggery sounds like mugging to me, but it's not.
It sounds like, oh, that's buggery. Yeah.
Balderdash. Because we're British. England. We're British. Yeah, we're sorry, our English listeners. You know, we're stupid Americans, so, you know. Yeah.
This tracks, right?
Yeah, this tracks.
So what was happening at the time was there was massive persecution by police, blackmailers. Like, they were sent out to look for gay people to arrest and humiliate and destroy.
And
lives were destroyed. So this was the first British film to take on the subject of homosexuality and unfair laws. So the lead actor was Dirk Bogarde, was a closeted gay man, and he risked his career as a...
He was closeted? Wow.
He was closeted, and he played the lead. Barrister Melville Farr was the character's name. Side note, Janet and John did not like the title victim.
Yeah, I can see why they wouldn't like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But so they never called it that. And it has this screenplay has long been considered groundbreaking for its unsentimental exploration of gay men living under the constant threat of blackmail, physical violence, and jail time. It's about this one man who works to expose a blackmail ring, knowing that he will be exposed once he exposes them.
The fact that it was a blackmail ring, they're making money.
And I think these things happened.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I bet it was very lucrative too, because back then you could die if you were, revealed to be gay.
You could die. Yeah. I mean, you would at the very least be completely ruined.
Yeah.
But the film is really interesting. You know, we talked about how it was like trying to expose racism whilst being racist. This was exposing the horrors of homosexuality laws that were terrible, but also somewhat detrimental to homosexuals.
What do you mean?
For example, this is where I read like some of the text. There's a conversation where he admits actual sexual feelings towards a specific man, like towards his wife, right there. And he's horrified by himself. I almost wrote it down and then acted it out for you, but you're welcome. I chose not to do that. but it retains the feeling of shame for themselves. And it actually, I had a moment where I thought, and this is why pride is the word. This is why we call it celebrating pride.
Yeah.
Because even when they could have those moments of being themselves, they were meant to be absolutely ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, it's the self-hatred. Like it's
yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen Fellow Travelers, that series?
No.
Oh, my God. Oh, the fabulous. Oh, my God. He's so fucking sexy. Matthew Bomer. Do you know who Matthew Bomer is? Matt Bomer?
That sounds familiar.
Oh, my God. He's so fucking sexy. The lead from Bridgerton second season, one of the brothers. I'm forgetting the actor's name, but I think it's based on a book, but it's a series on Paramount Plus / Showtime. And it's like basically a love affair between two men throughout, you know, the years, but it begins in, I believe it's the it begins in the 50s because McCarthyism is like rampant and like like a lot of witch hunts and purgings. It's, you know, it's designed to get about to basically get rid of any progressive ideas, but also to demonize gay people.
Yeah.
And so it's like how they navigate through that and just their lives in general. But it is so good. It's very sexy. So don't watch it with the kids. But because I, you know, I think Matt Bomer is the most gorgeous white man that's ever been on television. I'm just saying. He is so fucking sexy. Anyway, it's it's so funny. Like
gorgeous white men
for the Emmy Awards, he showed up, and people online who don't really know that who he is, they're like, "Who is this?" I was like, "Oh, that's Bay there. That's Matt Bomer, baby." So yeah, but it's about like because I thought about it, I forgot about it in the 50s McCarthyism. I mean. Not only was on a Red Scare, but it was also to weed out and harass gay people too. So
yes, yeah. Yes. So that like, oh, and by the way, the Sexual Offenses Act of 1967 legalized homosexual acts between consenting men over the age of 21, which is hilarious to me. So a 20-year-old gay man cannot exist, but a 21-year-old gay man can. Cool.
But it's also like, have you not met young men?
Yeah, they're not waiting till they're 21. Okay,
they're trying to hump trees. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
But yeah.
So the text, it was interesting. It actually, it reminded me of Angels in America.
Yeah.
And I got to give it. Like, I know that we were commenting on these movies a little bit that they. You know, in our, from our perspective now, it, we can see where there are flaws in them.
Yeah.
But she risked a lot to get these subjects on a film that was mainstream.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really quite impressed that she was able to. Well, had the wherewithal to write this stuff.
Yes. You know? Which is why I'd love to know where she came from, what she did, what inspired her to it. Like Sapphire made people realize how racist they are. Like it did do some things. And
she put it in vehicles where the people who would normally be resistant to the idea are kind of like tricked into watching.
I mean,
and hopefully having their views challenged.
Exactly. So. Which allows me to overlook maybe some ways of phrasing, but like you know, and to have a man play a homosexual like on the screen while it was still illegal.
Yeah, I mean that's incredibly brave of him to be you know, closeted and like so it's so interesting because I feel like if an actor was gay in the 20s. It was fine, but then somehow, again, we talk about this, how, why are we going backwards? It's like the aliens are just like...
It's why you gotta keep talking, keep fighting, keep hope alive, man.
Keep like, hope that's, alive.
Yeah. And that, like, because in the 20s, I feel like they could have made this movie in the 20s.
Yeah, that's why I'm impressed that she's doing it in the 50s. And like, it's like, wow. But good on her. Like, because not only did she write it, but they got it on the screen, like you said.
They got it on the screen and it was up for awards. Like, that's the thing that gets me about how they keep rewriting our history. Mm-hmm. I argued with a friend, this was a long time ago. It was maybe like 20 years ago, but I remember, and it was some social media thing that it's not there anymore, but it was like MySpace or some shit. And we were talking about gay rights, and it was a friend that I had like in high school. And their argument to me was, well, no one was gay until the 90s.
Oh, I think you've told me this offline before.
I think I've told you this too. And I just feel like it's appropriate because... What the fuck? You know, like
do people really believe that. Well, I guess they said it, so they really believed
that. That was like, well, people started wanting to be gay in the 90s, and I just don't like it. What the fuck did you just say out loud? Wow. My God. But that's why, like, that's why it's so important to call this out. Like, not only has it been around since humanity has been around, but we've been making art surrounding this conversation.
Well, that's why the hateful people want to burn art, right? That's why they want to burn books. They want to burn paintings. They want to burn any evidence of,
So, I mean, and that, like, listen, Mabel, I tried so hard. I could not tell. If you know more, please tell me. My guess is that she was a very empathetic soul. She probably ran into if she was entertaining during World War II, there was actually a lot of mixed race situations because, you know, you need people to go to war. Suddenly, everyone's just a soldier, right?
I mean, it's also that I think people forget, and I've talked to white friends and loved ones who are not you, Miriam, who are like, we take a white people, racist white people shit too. like they're making us look bad. There's always been white people out there who are like, this is some bullshit. Like, and who are also, more importantly, willing to call it out and try and make the change. Like, you know, so I'm not surprised she exists, but I think that I think some people may just be more quiet about it or what have you, but the fact that she's making her art and trying to get it right, because obviously she's a person of her time, but the fact that she even wants to write about this stuff and gets it made and then gets it to win awards, it's like really quite amazing. And she should be commended for it because so many people may feel this way, but aren't either confident enough or brave enough to act on these feelings.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, you don't necessarily, throwing it out there, need to write the screenplay or start the podcast. You know, it's about noticing those moments and then saying something and helping that person in a moment.
Or, bear with me, it's about sending money to two ladies on a podcast.
Oh.
Who is saying these things for you through their Patreon. I'm just throwing that out there. So it's about sending money.
Lavetta is so smart, you guys.
I'm just kidding. But no, I'm not really kidding about that. But I hear your point. No, it's she sounds amazing. Now, is Green with an E at the end or is it just
not
G?
Not that I saw.
Okay.
Let me tell you, in my research, I got to say, there are so many Janet Greens. Oh, my God.
Oh. So is she Janet or Mabel?
Mabel is our friend. Mabel who suggested her.
Okay, that's right. Mabel, thank you, Mabel.
But yeah, she's also a character in a soap opera. So there's more about that character online than there is about our friend. But I did the best I could.
Now, Green is usually a last name that a lot of Jewish people used also.
Yeah, but she was born. Yeah, she might be Jewish. That sounds right.
Might be. Yeah. Janet Green.
Let's go with that.
It's like, it's just, but that's also such a, Green is such a like regular name, right? Like,
yes. By the way, trying to research the name she was born as, gave me less information about her.
I wonder why she changed her name. But she's in entertainment, so
kinds of reasons. It was Ethel.
Ethel.
And I think she wanted.
Yeah,
you know, maybe
Janet sounds better than Ethel.
A little.
Oh, Ethel's an old school kind of name, but.
Ethel Merman, baby. You know.
Ethel Merman, that's right. One of the greats. So, but thank you, Mabel, for suggesting that.
Yes. Like, that was a very fun journey to learn because I finally you know what? Let's analyze her movies.
And just so you know, sapphire is a term in American historical literary device. A sapphire is a prototype of a black woman in American literature. So you had the sapphire, which was quote unquote the sassy black woman. You also had the mammy. So you had the mammy, the sapphire, and then what's the other one? The other one is like the over-sexualized one, but sapphire is like the sassy black lady. And these
were like
archetypes.
I'm glad they can put you into categories so that you could just know who you are.
Oh, yeah. It's just...
You have to find it for yourself.
I'm sorry. God. The other one is like, it's the Jezebel. So Jezebel is the over-sexualized black woman. The sapphire is the sassy black woman. And the mammy archetype is the nurturing black woman. So... So sapphire, that's why I watched that when I saw it. I don't know where I saw it. I think it was like in the library or something. Who knows? But I watched it because of that kind of prototype.
What did you think of the movie? Do you remember?
No, I remember liking it. Like those old movies, I'm like you. And I think also because I'm more mature now, but even then I was like, these movies are of its time. I probably can't watch a movie with blackface. I don't care how, like this is of its time. I can't fucking stand Gone with the Wind, but it's of its time. So some of that stuff, you know, you have to realize it. Hell, there's some movies from the 90s that you're like, we let them get away with that.
Yeah. Honestly, like, I can't tell you how many times I've watched a movie made in like 2005.
Yeah.
With my children. I have to pause and be like, all right, you guys. So that's racist. And here's why. Like, you know, like, actually, we don't talk about women like that, children. And here's why. Like, it's a lot.
It's a lot of them in the 90s and the 2000s. Like, it's just like that. We're like, we let that go. Like, so that's why when people are like, oh, this movie from 1950. I'm like, are you serious? Because there's some problematic movies from the actual 90s or 2005.
Oh, so, yeah. I mean, and honestly, it's a lot of children's programming. Yeah. It's a lot of children's programming.
Yeah, stuff that we just watch and we're like, you know, so it's, you know, but I remember whenever I'm watching an old movie, I always something clicks in me knowing like, oh, this is of its time.
Yes.
So, you know, anything that's like probably pre 1985, 86, you just kind of have to put it in that category. Like I watched a movie recently with Steve Guttenberg. You know, you remember Steve Guttenberg?
I love Steve.
Police Academy.
I had the biggest crush on him. Oh my God.
Now I realize he's sort of like a regular guy, but he was a movie star. Like people don't realize like Steve Guttenberg was huge. He was like a box office. Like, so he's in this like film noir type film where he plays like this leading man. He's having an affair with his boss's wife. And then one night the wife is over there after a party at his company party. And after they make love, she comes to the window. He's in the bathroom and she sees this man attacking this woman. And she's naked. I'm like, why is she naked at the window? Anyway, like butt naked. And from the back and the front, we could see.
Oh, damn.
And she's
like
looking, and it's set in New York City. So it's like Washington Park. And she opens the window. And she's like, hey. And then he runs off. And the woman is, and then Steven Guttenberg comes out. He's also naked. And then so it becomes a sort of like mystery kind of thing. It was definitely a miss. But like the fact that they shot the woman like that, like this gratuitous nudity or him, like we didn't really need to see all of that. And then, it's just the way like her character becomes like weird and like she makes decisions that doesn't really match her intelligence. It's just of its time. And like, and then his character's like following the killer and like, and he just makes some dumb mistakes. And it's like, because it's from like 86 or something. It's like, you have to understand what you're watching, you know? So.
And you can like just critically think about it, which is why like I'll watch things, but I might stop my kids from watching them.
Yes. Yeah. Always, you know? Be mindful of the children. But like just if you are a film buff, you know that. But so I think it's just people who may not be really into films don't understand how transformative they can be.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's just for stupid fun. Like sometimes it's just stupid. Like you're just watching it. And you're like, this is cute. Like it's just dumb. So but thank you for sharing Janet Green with us.
You're very welcome.
And thank you guys for listening this week, as always, for downloading, for sharing it with your friends, for copying the link and sending it to your friends to tell them about Notorious Women. You know,
yes, please.
We appreciate you. Again, you can also help us by giving us a 5-star review in the Apple Store. That helps people find us, that helps us appear in like lists and yes, things like that. So if you also want to support us financially, like, again, if you want to help, you know, a Jewish and a Black woman make some moolah, you can send it to Patreon. We will pay taxes on it, just so you know.
We will. Oh, we're very good at that.
But if you want to send us $2 a month, $2,000 a month, $2,000 is a one night, one time. I mean, listen, I'm single, so we could kill two birds with one stone. I'm just saying.
You know, what?
I'm just saying, like, allegedly. So, you want to give us $50,000, whatever you want to do.
Yeah. There's no number too high. Don't hold yourself back. Okay.
You could do that at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. And Miriam, how else can they support the show?
You can follow us. Please follow us on Instagram. I'm literally begging you.
Please.
It's Notorious Women Podcast. And it's fun. Just like, follow us. What else? We also have TikTok, Notorious Women Podcast. I mean, we're very repetitive. YouTube, Notorious Women Podcast. I mean, and you're bored. And then if you want to email us, we're notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. And that is how to find us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And again, don't hold it against me. Vava and Janet Green.
Yes.
Get on.
You got
and
this.
I have just one thing to say to you. Bop, 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 bop. They're not like us. All right, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.